It's Friday, August 18th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that for a fantastic episode, it's Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. How do we get to August 18th? I mean, we're more than halfway through the month. Preseason games, news, drafts, mock drafts, salary cap drafts, a lot of stuff going on. We're starting to build portfolios. We're starting to get stuck on, you know, I'm in on this guy, I'm out on this guy. We had our Greg Dulcich moment. I was in on Dulcich. I'm now officially out on Dulcich. So it's August in the NFL, man. It's a great day to be alive.
It's a great day to be great, as Ian Harditz says. Yes. So I'm feeling that. I'm feeling very thankful that we're almost halfway through August, that we're almost to the real games, but we are still getting a lot of things that we need to adjust our rankings to, adjust our approach. We are going to talk, as Scott mentioned, how to approach and how to win your salary cap draft at the end of this episode. This is one that people request every single year. It's a fun league format. Scott, I think, is the best in the industry at dissecting and giving you the full rundown of a salary cap draft. We are going to talk about that in this episode, as well as tackle a big fantasy debate. But before that, like I said, we've got things going on that we might need to adjust our expectations to. So let's talk some news here. Lions head coach Dan Campbell said that Jameson Williams, wide receiver for the team, has a hamstring injury, and he will likely be sidelined for the remainder of the preseason. This is important because Jameson Williams is also not going to be on the field for the first 6 weeks of the season. Other Lions wide receiver news: Amon-Ra St. Brown is expected to miss a few days with practice with a minor ankle injury. Jeff Risden, great writer for the Lions Wire, said that Campbell also noted of Denzel Mims, quote, "He's in the room. Wish I could give you more." Not exactly a ringing endorsement. It's also worth noting that Denzel Mims himself hasn't practiced since August 5th. Josh Reynolds, who is like a Jared Goff favorite and a staff favorite, and Marvin Jones remain the top outside wide receivers for this team. Scott, this is a position I've been talking about for a long time on this roster. It remains a huge concern. And man, Jameson Williams, you know, I was talking with JJ Zacharyson at the expo this weekend. Like, if there was an example of like, hey, just don't draft on bad vibes, like Jameson Williams is right up there at the top at this point. And you know, I'm just curious, is he even a guy you'd think about rostering at this point right now?
Yeah, this pushed me over the cliff. I was 50-50 on maybe taking Williams. I was considering him in one industry draft. You had to wait 6 weeks already for him. And Dan Campbell had talked about the plan for the Lions was to give Williams all he could handle in August in means of developing him, right? Of giving him reps, of getting him comfortable, because he hardly played last year. I mean, he's basically going into his second rookie season. He's not going to get that time. And the problem is you draft Williams, you hold him for 6 weeks. It's not like he's plug and play in the seventh game, right? Then you're going to need a prove it week. And maybe the first game he's on a limited snap count or he doesn't do much. So when would you feel confident starting him? It's just to the point now that I won't draft him. And I hate saying that. Lions have an offensive line we like, an offensive coordinator we like. Jared Goff proved last year that he's better than average quarterback, that maybe the hate had gone too far. It obviously was a bad breakup with him and the Rams. But for an offense that we like a lot of pieces, it's just funny that the receiver room, it's St. Brown, the sun god, and you know, his injury thankfully sounds minor. I did not adjust St. Brown on my draft sheet, but Jameson Williams is undraftable for me in any format. You know, and then look, some people say, well, what about keeper league? What about dynasty? That's fine. I mean, the assumption here for the most part is seasonal managed league, and I just can't roll with Jameson Williams. And I hate saying that because he certainly looked like a difference maker at Alabama. And man, has he just been running bad? Mm-hmm. He gets hurt in the NCAA playoffs, and then he gets the suspension, and he's hurt now. His rookie season really never got lift off. So Jameson Williams, it may be another redshirt year for him.
And worst part about it too, you look at the schedule, the first game back, they play Baltimore anyways, which beyond the fact that I'd need a prove it week from Jameson Williams, like they might not play him a full snap count. Like that's quite possible. I'm also not that jazzed up about starting receivers against Baltimore. Most likely Marlon Humphrey is dealing with an injury right now. That's worth noting. Like we don't know when he's going to be out there, but still, and I know we're talking schedules deep into the season, who knows? The week after that, the Raiders, I probably think that's going to be a good matchup based on how their defensive depth chart goes. But then they have a bye week in week 9. So like we might get to week 10 before we're like, okay, Jameson Williams is a set it and forget it starter. And also that assumes, Scott, that Jameson Williams is really good. I was talking with my buddy James Coe about this, about how he looked in the preseason and some of the issues in the preseason. And I think it was fair to be skeptical about him as a prospect. Like, I liked him, but there were others that would argue that he was the best receiver in that class if you weren't accounting for the injury. But to me, it was like there was a clear top three tier by themselves of Wilson, Olave, London. You know, put those guys in anywhere you want. But I think Williams was a step down from those guys anyways and had issues to work out at the NFL level as a route runner, as a technician. Obviously, he's got speed for days, could outrun an entire SEC defense. But again, man, this is just, I already had him in a range in my rankings where I wasn't drafting. Like, I was basically telling you, yeah, you just, unless it's a deep league, you know, all you said, all the like accounting, I was telling you not to draft this guy anyways, just because of the unknown. And now this is an even bigger unknown. And I just think for the rest of the Lions roster, they're thinking about, I mean, again, Dan Campbell, like answering questions about, are you going to add anybody else? Well, I don't know who you're adding at this point, but I remain concerned about this position for the Lions.
For sure. Unfortunately, there isn't that free agent buffer that we have at like running back, where there are three or four guys that everybody was going to be maybe in on. Receiver doesn't have that group. Let's just to put a bow on Williams. Remember, he had to leave Ohio State to get playing time at Alabama, which is just how loaded that crazy wide receiver room has been at Ohio State, and get ready for Marvin Harrison Jr., who's going to join the NFL in a year or two. And he looks like a dominant player. He couldn't get on the field until everybody basically skipped bowl games or left school. That's how loaded the OSU receiver treadmill has been. But, and when you draft Williams, the other thing is that he just blocks you from going to the waiver wire, right? This is one spot you have to dedicate to him. He can't put him on IR or anything. He's just blocking you. And remember, for all the work we do, you know, Matt's here every day. We're prepping. We're changing our rankings. We're doing mock drafts. We're doing best ball drafts. We're doing real drafts. And then September's going to come, and there's going to be guys you didn't consider or you had low expectations for, whose roles have changed, or maybe the team is playing possum in the summer. You're going to want those guys. And you're not going to want Jameson Williams standing in your way of improving your roster. The waiver wire in September is gigantically important, because there are going to be reveals that nobody saw coming. Drafting Jameson Williams is just going to block you from that stuff. So that's no good. Let me ask you, you put the staff favorite tag on Josh Reynolds. Just give people an idea of what your expectations are, or maybe where they can target him. How does he fit into a roster build right now?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up, because I was going to kind of end with him. Where in the first 3 weeks of the season, we know they play Kansas City in the opener. We expect that to be a high scoring affair. Actually, Josh Reynolds was, I think he was involved in the famous Rams, or it might have been the year before. I'm pretty sure he was on that team.
That 51-45 or whatever it was.
Exactly. Yeah, the game that changed modern football, is like every football writer wanted to tell you. I think that was it's important, because again, Goff has history with this guy. And look, do I have like a long catalog of reception perception on Josh Reynolds? No, but I do remember from him as a prospect, and even some of those early days, like, he's not a bad player. He didn't really work out in Tennessee when they signed him as a free agent, but he immediately grabbed on with the Detroit Lions with Jared Goff and a bunch of Rams guys in the front office. And he's like a solid, probably should be a number three or four receiver, but he's an important player for them at this point, because he's going to probably play almost every single snap. They get the Chiefs, they get the Seahawks, they get the Falcons in the first 3 weeks of the season. Like, if you are in one of these leagues where you got to start three receivers, you have multiple flexes, I do think he's worth a late round dart throw. Like, you're probably not riding him throughout the course of the season, but again, this is the guy they're going to need, because this position is a problem.
Reynolds had 6 for 80 and a touchdown in that game, which was November 19th, 2018, Rams 54, Chiefs 51. And I know, Matt, you probably dialed up Chris Conley in DFS, who had 7 for 74 and 2 touchdowns. What a great day to be alive.
Chris Conley going to be a sneaky immaculate grid guy, by the way. Got drafted by the Chiefs. He played for the Jaguars. He played for the Texans. He plays for the Tennessee Titans last year. I think he's on the San Francisco 49ers right now. Probably won't make that roster, but you never know. Special teams guy. He played. There's a few players, Scott, and I promise you're not going to derail the whole show talking about this, but there are a few players that like have just rotated around the AFC South. Like, that is one of, if not the most incestuous divisions in football. So if you're playing immaculate grid, keep Chris Conley in the back of your mind there.
Yeah, and I struggle a lot of times with the Jaguar connections. The way the grid takes me down is when they use expansion teams, because it takes all my, you know, when I was a kid, knowledge, the stuff that I have, you know, I know better than my social security number or my insurance card information, is that old stuff. And I can't use any of it when you ask me stuff about the Memphis Grizzlies Are you asking stuff about the Houston Texans? I should probably spend a day studying the Houston Texans for Immaculate Grid purposes because I'm getting beat over the head with that team.
Speaking of the AFC South, NFL Network's Ian Rapoport reports that an MRI revealed it was just a sprained LCL for Treylon Burks, who's going to be sidelined for a few weeks. I know I said only a sprained LCL. I don't want nothing to happen to my LCL, but I'm just saying that because this looked a lot worse at first when you saw some of the videos, when you saw he was being carted off the practice field. We've jumped the shark a little bit. Some reporters have with like, oh, he's getting carted off. You know, there's different types of carts here in training camp. Like, they're not going to make you hobble to the sideline. It's fine. But regardless, Treylon Burks only going to miss a few weeks. I already had questions. I'm not saying he's undraftable like Jameson Williams at all, but this is already a guy I had questions about. You know, they add DeAndre Hopkins. We know they're not going to throw the ball a lot. Again, I like the player, but I have some questions about his ceiling as a player. I kind of think that I've just moved my sights. You mentioned Greg Dulcich from Greg Dulcich to Chigo Conquo. Is that like breakout second year tight end now at this point? Like, I think there was a chance straight up that he could just be the better pass catcher than Treylon Burks on this team. And like, unfortunately now, because I have all those questions and, you know, we'll see, maybe by the time we're talking next week, it's like, oh, Burks is fine. He's going to play week one. But you always say you don't like to draft guys who are coming into the year with an injury and we want to win September. You've got me thinking about winning September, Scott. These are the type of guys I'm now like really waving the red flag on.
Bingo. I you said very well, and that's how I feel. Burks was a seam call for me too, a borderline call for me too. And now that he's hurt and Hopkins has come in on a team where there may not be a lot of passing volume, and Okonkwo is a mouth to feed. And you're right. I mean, take all of our Dulcich promotion, just scratch off Dulcich and write in Okonkwo. Yeah. I mean, you know, the second year player, not a great blocker, but gets downfield, exciting, you know, YPC guy, yards after catch guy. Burks, you're not going to play him right away. I don't know what the ceiling is. If he's not the best receiver on a team that doesn't throw the ball a lot, and he could even be the third best target if Okonkwo pops. We know Hopkins. They brought in Hopkins, obviously, to prioritize him. I'm going to have to be in a room. This is possible. You could be in a room where nobody wants him, where everybody's drafting. Remember, in Yahoo, they'll have the little red flag or they'll have the little mark that shows that he's hurt, or people will call up the injury tab on him or the information tab on him, and they'll see it. So it is conceivable you could get in a room where everybody goes hands off on Burks, and then he become, okay, whatever, I'm just stashing him at the end of my bench. And if I have to cut him early on, I'm prepared to do that. But the way I always phrase it, I'm not looking for injuries. Injuries are going to find me. I'm not going to look for injuries. Now, some players you have to make exceptions for because the payoff is that great. Is there a great ceiling for Treylon Burks? I don't think there is, not on this current roster. So Jameson Williams to me was undraftable. Burks, I'm going to have to really like the price. I'm going to have to feel like there's a significant round discount if I don't get it. You want to beat me with Treylon Burks? You're welcome to do it. It's not going to be my play.
Next receiver injury here, and this one's much more unfortunate. Russell Gage, Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver, is going to miss the entire 2023 season after suffering a non-contact injury in practice. I realize Russell Gage is not on the was really not on the redraft radar. Like, we've already got questions about the two receivers ahead of them on the depth chart when we're talking about like really good players playing with potentially Baker Mayfield, Kyle Trask. But I do want to note that Russell Gage, man, it's a bummer because he had this great final season with the Falcons after Calvin Ridley got hurt. He gets specifically recruited by Tom Brady to go play with the Bucks, and he was just banged up all the time last year, and then he gets injured here again. It's just unfortunate because I think it was a nice story the way he finished there in Atlanta and going to Tampa Bay, but it's just really probably not going to happen for him at this point. But my question to you, Scott, again, nobody was probably drafting Russell Gage in like a typical league, but does this absence, and you know they have Trey Palmer, who's an intriguing rookie, a guy I didn't get to chart for RP, but you know, just a guy that's flashed in practice a little bit. But does Gage leaving the picture make you adjust your expectations for Chris Godwin or Mike Evans? Because this is one thing I get hung up on. If it was just like Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and nobody else there, I'd be like, maybe with the fact that Baker Mayfield's the quarterback. But that at least just got me thinking about maybe adjusting expectations. Does that sound right to you at all?
I mean, the targets have to be redistributed into the offense somewhere, but I'm just afraid that the quarterback play may be below average. I'm really worried that Mayfield is an NFL starter, and although Trask actually was interesting in college, but I don't think he's going to be anything more than a backup in the pros. Tampa Bay, the problem with all the teams in the NFC South is that they can squint and see a path to win the division because it's so weak. But what Tampa Bay should really do the goal is not to win this division going 8-9 or 9-8. The goal is to sting and get Caleb Williams next year or somebody like that. The next future quarterback. No, nobody is delusional here. Nobody thinks, oh, yeah, Baker will turn it around. We'll have a 7-year solution with Baker Mayfield. Or Kyle Trask is the most underrated player in the NFL. John Wolford, the Rams just didn't know how to use him. He'll shock the NFL. Nobody's saying that. So Tampa Bay, actually, if I were the Bucs, and I know trades can be difficult in the NFL for financial reasons and cap reasons, I would trade Mike Evans. I would trade Chris Godwin. I would say they're not going to be on the next great team we have. I would bottom it. I would gut this roster is what I would do. I would start over. I would reset. Evans and Godwin are not draftable for me because what's going to happen is they're going to be open and they're going to say, oh, Evans is frustrated, man. He's been open all day. And then Mayfield's, yeah, you know, he's airmailed him. He's thrown it at his feet. He threw one in the sidelines. You know, Baker and Evans aren't on the same page right now. We're going to be seeing that for a month. Then they'll try Trask. That won't work out. Even Rashad White, I mean, you look at everybody behind him. It's like, okay, he's got the backfield to himself. But what good is volume if the team's no good? If the team's going 3-and-out, I don't care about your volume. Tampa Bay is going to be one of the 3 or 4 teams I draft the least players from.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's nobody there that, like, I can get interested in Godwin at a certain point. Evans just, like, he goes in the bucket of players that are volatile that I have some questions about. But I'd rather take the chance that, like, Kenny Pickett is better with George Pickens, you know, that Mike Williams really stays healthy all year. Like, even Jerry Jeudy, like, I like Jerry Jeudy better than Mike Evans this year. And you know, I've got my questions
even
about
Jeudy. Even Jerry Jeudy, listen to you saying something nice about Jerry Jeudy. That's the whole point with Evans, too, is all my pivots, right? I'm looking at the guys I have ranked around Evans, like Deontay Johnson, like Mike Williams, like Jahan Dotson, like Pickens, right? I want all those guys. I mean, at least with Pickens, and I know, look, second year, we don't know if Kenny Pickett's any good, but although I thought Kenny Pickett did look pretty good at the end of last season, you may get Pickett a round or two after Evans anyway. They just happen to be close in my ranks. It doesn't mean they'll be close in your ADP run out, but I want players on the escalator. I want players who haven't had their best season yet. Mike Evans going to the Hall of Fame, his best seasons are in the bank right now, and now the drop-off. Look, I don't know how great Tom Brady was in his last season, but they were happy to throw 700 passes. They ain't doing that with Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask. They're going to lose 200 passes in the wash this year.
Exactly. 100%. And yeah, just no thanks. I will keep my eye on if those guys get dealt at the trade deadline. I'll at least keep my eye on that because that is something to be interested there. Next news item here.
Go for it, Lions. How about Mike Evans on the Lions?
Yeah.
Right? Yo. Or Chris Godwin on the Lions. Wouldn't you love that?
The only thing that holds me up about the Mike Evans part of it, I mean, Chris Godwin's a little samey with Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, there'd be some overlap for sure. But Evans is an outside guy.
Evans would be perfect, but he is like a Tampa Bay guy. They love him there. I could see, like, I don't know. It's just they're a weird team. They're a very weird team. But he'd be perfect on the Lions. That's a great example. Next news item here. Dolphins left tackle Teron Armstead was carted off practice field Thursday. This ended up being one of those, okay, it sounded worse than it was, because Cameron Wolf of NFL Network reports that Dolphins left tackle Teron Armstead texted me, "I'll be good to go," a few minutes ago. Armstead is going to get an MRI to be 100% certain, but it sounds like good news for Armstead, one of Miami's best players after a practice injury scare. I wanted to put this on the outline because if you look at the splits with and without Tua last year for the Miami Dolphins, like, and it was crazy just how good that offense was, but how non-functional they were without Tua, right? Like, you'd think, oh, anybody can come into this offense and run it with, you know, like, why can't Teddy Bridgewater be good with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle out there? Why can't even, like, Skylar Thompson be good with those two guys out there? It should be just point, shoot, get it to the fast guys. Well, number one, I think that says something that Tua is, he's not as, like, completely unfunctional as some people think. Secondly, though, if you look at some of those games, like week 18 against the Jets, Teron Armstead is inactive. Week 17 against the Patriots, Teron Armstead is inactive. You look at week 6 against Minnesota Vikings, Teron Armstead is inactive. The Jets game after the Bengals concussion scare on Thursday night for Tua, Teron Armstead plays 8 snaps. So even that game against the 49ers where they lose the Dolphins 33-17, Teron Armstead is inactive. This is a guy that is one of the best left tackles in the league, but is very injury prone. I mean, he's missed a lot of time. We don't typically talk about linemen here on the show, but I think this one is important because it kind of continues my theme with the Dolphins that I like all these guys if everything is equal and everybody's on the field. But I think one receiver goes down, this offense looks very different. Teron Armstead goes down, we've seen this offense looks very different. And obviously, we know the injury questions with the quarterback as well.
This team feels like the Jenga puzzle, right? That one piece gets pulled out of the middle and then everything collapses. I ask you this, Matt. I'm sure you talked about this earlier in the week, but I want to get it here from my own ears. They did not sign Dalvin Cook. So now we have the three-headed incumbent monster, you know, Mostert, Wilson, Akane. As you mentioned, you know, the offensive lineman, Armstead, we don't know his status right now. Tua is, of course, a major question mark. Nobody knows how many games he's going to play. At the end of draft season, which Miami running back, if any, will you have proactive shares of?
People really like Devon Achane, and I have him ranked as the top guy here. But I'm totally doing the hedge ranking. I'm looking at my rankings right now. They're all like somewhere between 45 and 51. I'm sure we're all doing that. People like Devon Achane really, really a lot, but I'm concerned that when you hear them talk about him, he sounds like a guy they're going to use situationally and, you know, the speed and stuff like that. I mean, the Cowboys seem much more interested in using Deuce Vaughn, like a smaller guy at real time running back, than the Miami Dolphins do. I only said that to get Colin's reaction in the chat, but the Dolphins don't seem to talk that way with Devon Achane, but I might be wrong about that. So he's the guy I have ranked highest, if that answers the question. But secondly, I do think if you are trying to get off to like a fast start, we've talked about winning September, you want to throw a late round dart at Jeff Wilson, who kind of was the lead back for most of last year when he was healthy. That's the guy to throw the late round dart at.
Yeah. As a note, as a little wave to producer Colin, I just moved up Jake Ferguson, my tight end board. He's now inside the top 20, officially a tight end sleeper. So there you go.
There we go.
Go Cowboys. I also had, shout out to my friend Mike Perillo, who was debating. He's in a league that has really psycho defensive scoring, and he could keep a really cheap George Pickens or a really cheap Dallas defense, which sounds like absurd, but in this particular league, it actually was a legitimate question. We talked about it for like 20 minutes. So that's wild. People, a lot of steam piling up for Colin's favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys. I'm just afraid deciphering the volume. The problem with the Miami backs is you got to call the shot in a managed league. You have to see the usage coming ahead of time. And I think McDaniel is going to say, okay, this could be a game that fits one player's skill set, and then we play a different opponent next week and we do different things. I don't think there's going to be week-to-week continuity unless one player is so damn efficient and explosive that they can't deny him that opportunity. So I think it's going to be one of these weeks where it's like, well, what happened? Last week, Jeff Wilson was great, and this week he gets four touches. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of stops and starts in this backfield. And I know it feels like a cop-out. And a lot of fantasy analysts would say, where there's a nebulous nature, where the backfield is murky, that's where the profit is. You solve that, you get a great ADP, and you make a big profit. But I'm not sure there's a winner in this backfield for fantasy purposes.
ADP has it the same way as basically my rankings, which is 123rd overall players, Devon Achane, 138th overall players, Raheem Mostert, and Jeff Wilson stuck in the middle there.
Shrug emoji.
Shrug emoji. So yeah, but as you said, Scott, I will, if Achane is around in an area where I'm taking like my fourth running back, I'm totally fine taking the shot, just that maybe he is the ambiguous backfield theory, that he is the guy. A backfield I thought was not ambiguous was the Carolina Panthers. Panthers head coach Frank Reich said that Miles Sanders, who's been dealing with a groin injury, is, quote, getting close to return to practice. Reich said, we're not likely going to see Sanders at all in the preseason. He missed a lot of practice, like I said, with this groin issue. Could he end up being a slow starter? Could we end up seeing Chuba Hubbard and Raheem Blackshear maybe with bigger roles than I thought? That's one backfield typically, Scott, where we talk about the running back insurance policy. This is why I don't love doing that, because I'm sitting here right now on August 17th. I have no idea if Chuba Hubbard would get more work than Raheem Blackshear. You know, Chuba Hubbard's a Matt Rhule guy. He's a holdover from the old staff. Raheem Blackshear, we don't know too much about. So I really liked drafting Miles Sanders because I think he's going to moonwalk into a three down role in an ecosystem should have a good offensive line with a good defense. Like, that lends itself to putting the ball in the hands of the running back a lot, especially with a rookie quarterback. But this groin injury's got me a little spooked, man. Again, hearing your voice in the back of my head.
Yeah, I think I like Hubbard a little bit more than you. Not that anybody thinks he's an explosive talent, a special talent, but at least he was drafted. Blackshear wasn't. And I thought Hubbard acquitted himself well when he was needed to play the last couple of years. I don't dislike him. The problem is there's no standalone value. If Sanders is healthy, then Hubbard is just the understudy. He's somebody you need an injury there. Of course, Sanders, of course, is dinged up right now. But Hubbard, you might get him on some builds as like a running back five or later, where they're just lottery tickets, and they're gonna be guys you cut quickly if you see something you like in September. I can live with that with Hubbard. I'm not pounding the table for him, but I think I'll draft into him. Blackshear will have to do something to make my roster. I'm not going to draft him.
totally fair. Maybe just a hero RB, zero RB type build. You like take a shot at Chuba Hubbard if he's going to play more in those first 3 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. Last thing here, it's the daily check-in, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but the Colts announced that Jonathan Taylor, who'd returned to training camp, has now left camp for, quote, personal reasons, and that his absence is excused. Scott, I mean, we're a fantasy football podcast. Jonathan Taylor is a very important player in fantasy football. It's not been a fun offseason at all for Jonathan Taylor. I'm just quick temperature check on how you feel about as Jonathan Taylor turns, basically.
Yeah, he's a third round pick right now. And this is somebody I thought was defendable in late first round, was a good turn pick. Early, you know, you get Jonathan Taylor in the second round, you've done well. And now not only is he a third round pick for me, I'm afraid to take him. Because he's got a rookie. He's got two things working against him once he gets on the field. He's tied to a rookie quarterback that could hurt the octane of the offense. And he's tied to a rookie quarterback who's going to run a ton.
Right.
So when the offense is clicking, it could be Richardson's legs. And when the offense isn't clicking, they're punting and he's not in the field. I don't know how good this team was. In full disclosure, I thought they were going to, use your term, moonwalk to the AFC South championship last year. Spoiler.
We said a lot of regrettable things about the Colts last year.
Burn it all. Burn it to the ground, man. Forget all of it. And of course, they totally, you know, they detonated everything. They cut Matt Ryan in the middle of the season. They're starting again with Richardson, who's a fascinating guy. We talk about a wide range of outcomes, right? I mean, he could be Cam Newton. He could be Terrell Pryor. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm glad he's starting day one, which is what he should. When you draft somebody that early, that's what you expect. But Jonathan Taylor, I would have thought he was probably, for me, 6 weeks ago, proactive pick. Mm-hmm. Now he's maybe I can squint and see him in yellow in the third round. But I think like Frank Schwab and I co-manage a team, and he's a Wisconsin guy, Frank is. And of course, so is Jonathan Taylor. And Frank's a big Taylor guy. I know we're going to have a debate on it. And Frank's a very persuasive and smart guy. Maybe he'll talk me into Taylor. I need to be talked into Taylor at this point. I can't take him proactively.
I'm a fan of Anthony Richardson. I think this offense could be really good with him. You know what would help? If it had a really good running game. And I know we're in an area of, okay, running backs are just replaceable, this, that, and the other. You can't convince me that this running game is going to be just fine, is just as good as it would be with Jonathan Taylor if it was like Evan Hall and Zach Moss, who's been dealing with
depth chart. That depth chart's depressing. To the point that they need to add. So if they have any questions about Taylor availability or durability, they really need somebody else here.
Well, they tried to like recruit Kareem Hunt and like, right. Nah, don't sign with the Saints. And then they worked him out and then didn't sign him, which again has me a little like, okay, everybody's working out Kareem Hunt. Nobody's signing him. But yeah, like, are they about to call up Leonard Fournette in a couple of weeks? You know, like now that Dalvin Cook's off the board, like, Zeke's off the board. I don't know if that would be a fit, but yeah, I mean, the fact they worked out Kareem Hunt and didn't mm-hmm. immediately sign him, it's just that doesn't.
Yeah, I wish I had Kareem well. Hunt's frequent flyer miles because he's basically seen the whole country, right? It feels like he's gone to every team, but nobody signed him. Do you see a good fit for Hunt? Is somebody, and obviously, that could just be whatever team loses a major running back in the next few days. Sometimes that makes these things happen, but I mean, we saw Cook and the Jets and the Dolphins, that was dancing around for a while. The Patriots, I think a lot of people speculated they were going to add somebody. Do you see a good fit for Hunt right now?
No, not really, honestly, because I just don't. I didn't think he had much left based on last year, and I feel like that's kind of been confirmed at this point. So yeah, he would be a guy that if your starter is going to miss a few weeks and you just need a guy that's going to like a professional to come in there, like that would be it. But if your starter is down like long term, I'd rather just get a look at somebody else.
Let me ask you this, because I know you do the great program with Austin Eckler, and they're an exciting team this year. New coordinator. I think a lot of people are expecting a bounce back for Justin Herbert. I've never loved the depth behind him, and I don't know what their financial situation is right now. Would they maybe want to add a nice backup for Eckler, or you think they're pretty happy with their running back room?
Well, you know, we just had the first episode of Eckler's mm-hmm. Edge was yesterday, and this actually came up that he has been like banging the table for one of these young guys to okay. step up, right? To step up and kind of make that move up the depth chart to give him a breather, right? Because he's talked about this. He doesn't want to be a guy that handles a ton of work. And that was basically our topic on the show yesterday of like how to figure out. By the way, if you're not listening to Eckler's Edge, like, trust me, we're dialed in this year, bro. Like he's given some, and I'm not talking just to you, Scott. I'm talking to the grand podcast audience out there. Like he's really trying to like decipher some of these committee backfields for us. And that, again, that's what we were talking about yesterday. And on his own backfield, it's just I don't think that anybody like Josh Kelly's given him some moments, right? Like, and Eckler was really high on Kelly at different times last year as like a second fiddle. And but then he ended up getting hurt. So it kind of stalled the moment. Josh Kelly ended up getting hurt, stalled that momentum. I am a little surprised, honestly, and I know fantasy people would have, like, you know, ripped their eyebrows out over this. I'm a little surprised they never got, like, never gave Zeke Elliott a call, you know, because he would seemingly be like, I mean, not that they need help in short yardage, right? Because Eckler's been so good as a touchdown scorer, but just a guy that could take some of those, like, grinder carries away from him. And, you know, obviously there's Kellen Moore, who was with Zeke forever in Dallas, even to the point I'm pretty sure they played together. So yeah, I was a little surprised that never happened. And maybe maybe they're a team that calls Leonard Fournette if none of these backs step up. But I think it's basically like they're looking at Josh Kelly right now as their RB2. But if one of these other guys like Isaiah Spiller, I know they have I can't remember his name, but I'm looking it up right now, but they have a guy who's like popped a little in preseason that they moved on from Larry Roundtree for. So yeah, I think they are trying to figure it out, just like we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I remiss not being able to hear the program this morning. I was working on the tight end primer, but this is why the Eckler show is so great. I mean, one, he's obviously really smart, and two, he gets fantasy. But in a world where so much of the sound bites in the NFL are, what else is he going to say? It'd be so easy for Austin Eckler just to say how great all the backups are behind him. And we feel 100% confident if I get hurt that nothing's going to fall off. He tells you the truth. If he's really high on somebody, he'll tell you. If he's not sure on something, he'll tell you. And you're not just getting boilerplate comments from him. So again, thrilled that he's back for another year. And he's a different kind of NFL interview because he's thoughtful and he'll tell you stuff that maybe a lot of other players wouldn't.
Elijah Dotson, that's the undrafted free agent running back who had a huge game, 6 carries, 92 yards, and 2 touchdowns in his preseason debut.
All the Dotsons. I want you to draft all the Dotsons.
We're not going to sit here and geek out about the fantastic route runners in Washington for the rest of the show. We're actually going to conclude Strategy Week here by looking at our latest Yahoo staff mock draft and provide everything you need to know about how to crush your salary cap draft right after this break. All right, Scott, salary cap drafts. Listen, like I said at the top, and I'm not blowing smoke here, this is really how I feel about it. I think you are the best in the game at like helping people with this, helping to understand the intricacies of it. Obviously, our boss agrees because you were tasked with writing the recap for our latest mock, which was a salary cap draft. We'll touch on that here in just a sec. But first, for the uninitiated, explain to people what a salary cap draft is and how it works.
Sure. So instead of a snake draft where it's like, okay, you pick first, you pick second, you pick third, you take a player when it's your turn, you are throwing out offers for, I'm going to nominate Christian McCaffrey. I'm going to offer $1. And then if you want him, you might say $2. It will obviously go up in this league. I think he went for $70 final offer.
Yeah.
So you can have any player you want. You have to fit your team under the salary cap, which for the mock that we did was 15 players, $200. So if you want a team, if you want to have 3 or 4 first round players, and Andy Behrens went big. He had like 4 players who I think would be top 15 players on anybody's board. And then he went, you know, the Stars and Scrubs build. That's doable. No more of this. You go to your draft in your Justin Jefferson jersey. You're all excited. Oh, what pick did I get? 11? Yeah. I'm not getting Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase or Christian McCaffrey or Travis Kelsey or all these guys you were excited to get off the table. Even if you pick first, you get Jefferson, you get Chase, you get McCaffrey, whoever you want. We did a great debate on who you should take at the first pick. 3 of us disagreed on that. But there's a lot of guys you're not going to get. You're not going to get Stephon Diggs. You know, you're not going to get, Kelsey, as I mentioned. You wouldn't get him first overall, probably, at least in most formats. That wouldn't make sense. So the salary cap league, what I like about it is it gives you more diversity of build. There's a lot more strategies in play. And you have to be accountable for everybody in the room. Matt, if you and I are in a snake draft, I'm picking second, you're picking 11th. Your picks don't really influence my picks. I don't really bug you at all any more than I usually do. And we just don't exist in the same room. Now, in a salary cap league, you have to think about what are people doing? Who do people want? Are people pushing up the price on me? Or they really want this player? I think Jeff Erickson made the comparison once that it was the difference between limit poker and no limit poker. It just, the dimensions are so much more significant. It's so much more complex. And again, I want the entire player pool at my feet. And I appreciate the nice words about, I've written a lot about salary cap drafts. I've played in a lot of leagues for everything. I've played salary cap for hockey. I've played salary cap for golf. I've obviously done it for baseball many years and football many years. Some of the other people in the industry who I really respect, Ian Allen of the Fantasy Index, who's one of my favorite writers, period, is really good with salary cap strategy, and Drew Davenport of Football Guys. I was on the salary cap panel that they had last year at the expo. I wasn't able to make it this year. He did invite me to do it. I know they had a panel on it. I'm sure it was great. And when they release some of those videos, I'll check it out, because he really loves the salary cap format. And he's got great ideas. He's also, Drew Davenport is a lawyer, and he's really great. Whenever there's an NFL situation with a suspension or somebody's in hot water legally, he gives great intel. These long threads, usually on Twitter, X, whatever they're calling it now, that are invaluable. I don't know anybody else who's really in that space. He's excellent. So, check out Ian's work and check out Drew's work. I'm part of a...
Yeah, at Drew Davenport FF on Twitter. And yes, I told him this weekend last weekend, how much I appreciate and like always read his threads. He's got a good one out about Joe Mixon right now, who didn't mention in the news, was found not guilty of aggravated menacing after his bench trial. So yeah, he's got a hashtag FF legal update. Definitely check out Drew's work
for sure,
for the salary cap, but for this stuff as well.
I'm glad you mentioned Mixon too, by the way. Just in passing, he's jumped like a half round to a round on my board. He went from yellow to green to me. He's going to be somebody I'm probably overweight on when draft season ends. There's just nothing behind him on a good offense. That does make the assumption that Joe Burrow is basically fine in September, but I think he will be. So, green light for Mixon, certainly green light for Davenport, green light for Ian Allen, two of my favorites. But I'll save this one more thing about salary cap before we get to some of the strategies. People who have tried it, I swear, if 50 people have tried it at my behest, I think I've maybe heard one person say, nah, that wasn't really for me. You can do it on Yahoo. It doesn't take that long. It takes a little bit longer than a draft for sure, but a regular standard snake draft, but it's not that much longer. We did our mock inside of 2 hours, we didn't even have the tightest windows for the nominations and for the offer cycle. Yeah. So we could have even done it shorter if we had tweaked some of that. And if you ever, the way Tout Wars does for fantasy baseball when they run these salary cap drafts is they have an auctioneer or, a person barking out, handling the proceedings. And that thing moves quick. You have to really be on your player pool and on your ideas of what you're going to do. You don't have time to look up stuff. You have to really react. And that, I always walk out of there with my head spinning, but it's good because it's fun and it's nuanced and it's weird. Every salary cap draft is weird in its own way. And I love it. It's challenging. And I'm not saying I walk out every draft like I pounded it. It's more like, what did I do wrong? I missed a pocket. There's an opportunity to do something and I screwed up. In this particular mock that we did, a bunch of us left money on the table, which is like the worst thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And let me just pivot that to the first bit of strategy I want you to keep in mind. It's better to overpay, overoffer, overspend on a player you're in love with, a player you believe in, a player who's going to be at the front of your roster, rather than save your money and then have to spend twice of what Brandon Ayuk is worth because he's the last good receiver. So I want you to consider, it's not a bad idea to be aggressive early. Even if you think the early prices are crazy, maybe dip your toe in the pool and get a good player anyway. Because if you save your money like we all did and there's nothing to spend it on, it's soul crushing, man. You have to... I think a lot of people think that I'm just going to sit back and it's going to be all these bargains. And then they wait, and they find out that I've saved my money for Brandon Ayuk. I've saved my money for Darren Waller. That's an awful feeling.
I mean, you're like minor trigger here with your use of Ayuk as the example, but it's a great point overall, because like, this is why, I mean, generally drafting with tiers is really important.
Yes, sir.
But I think especially in salary cap, because, I mean, it's the funny thing is you're bringing up Ayuk as the example here. But like, if I look at my third tier of receivers, the guys at the very end of that tier are Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and DeAndre Hopkins. So if I'm looking at my tiers there, you don't want to be at the end of that tier. You don't want to be at the end of that run and feel like you have to overspend before you drop down to like the Deontay Johnson, Michael Pittman, DJ Moore tier, right? So that is a great point. I would say just a couple of overall strategies. That was a great like full explanation, like super general stuff. If you can't tell from the way Scott's talking about it, this is a little bit more psychological warfare than a typical snake draft, which, as you said, typically follows just the same old order. No fantasy draft is the same. They're all their unique little snowflakes. This is definitely like no salary cap draft goes the same way. They're all very unique. Second, Scott says they don't take long. Your first few, you're going to be like, yo, this took a long time. So just plan your day around it a little more than you would even in a normal fantasy draft. Make sure you've got your bathroom break settled. make sure you've got, you know, you're not hungry in the middle of it. Oh my God, by the way, you know, people, some people say don't drink and draft at all. Listen, if you want to get a, you want to get a little buzz on with your buddies at your fantasy draft, I'm not going to be, I'm not going to be the police on that one. Okay. You do you, have a good time. This is fantasy football. It's supposed to be fun. Have a good time. You can drink and draft, but drinking during a salary cap draft, bro, you might get yourself in trouble if you're one of the last ones left and you've got to throw that money around. Like, just be careful. So those are my general tips before Scott gives his actual expert tips here. Let's talk about varying nomination style, because this is something I tried to do. Right. I always love to, you know, try to nominate somebody that I don't really want just to see if people will go crazy. I did that in this draft with Gabe Davis, which you joked about in your mock recap that everybody can go read on Yahoo. I threw Gabe Davis out there. I actually don't mind drafting Gabe Davis this year. I think he's a little underrated this year, where he was way overrated last year. I threw Gabe Davis out for a buck. Nobody took him. I ended up having both Bills receivers on my team because that wasn't my plan. But my idea there was like, okay, everybody to start this draft is throwing out superstar players, you know, throwing money around at CMC and you know, all these guys. You can even argue that that was what happened with Kenneth Walker, who got nominated in this draft at a kind of a weird time. And he ended up going for a song. So maybe everybody was taking their bathroom breaks during that. Maybe everybody hadn't planned their lunch out like I told you to do. But that's sort of a strategy you can do in a salary cap draft. Like, I don't want this guy, but I'm going to throw him out at a weird time. And maybe I get him at a discount, or maybe like I get people to overspend on somebody like that.
I love throwing off the cadence of the nominations, because the early nominations, I had the first nomination. I think I threw out Jefferson. McCaffrey came out early. And also, if somebody times out and they haven't filled their queue, the software on Yahoo is just going to throw out the highest ranked player. So a lot of the early nominations are going to be the stars. And if you throw the understudy back before the starter, right? That could be interesting. Yeah. Or I mentioned Ian Allen earlier, one of his favorite hacks is he said, well, look, I want a top four kicker, top four defense. And I know we won't spend a lot of time talking about kickers defense for good reason, but a lot of people are too proud to go $2 in those positions. So you probably can't get Justin Tucker for a buck, but you'll pick a top four kicker and throw him up for a buck early. And most people will just be too proud. Again, it's very room dependent. Maybe some room you'll get in kicker wars and you'll have a good laugh over it. But and if you get trampled, so what? I actually threw out early on, I threw out one of my favorite week one defenses, which is Baltimore, because they get Houston in week one. They're a big favorite, which is always a good, you know, when people ask me which defense should I start, usually the team that's the heavier favorite is the right answer, because they're going to get the game flow. Game script is more likely to fall in for them. So I threw them up for a buck, and then Jason Klobaka, our fearless editor, had to ruin my fun and overbid it. And I said, okay, fine. So your nominations, right? You're looking for information. You want to see what a tier is worth, but you want your opponents to spend money and you want them to take up slots. And another clear cut, who do I nominate? Once you have a player that cancels you out from a different player, I mentioned Ayuk earlier. If you had Deebo Samuel on your roster, you're probably not going to want Ayuk. So Ayuk makes sense. If you are the Mahomes guy, you're probably not going to want Josh Allen or, you know, Jalen Hurts or somebody like that. Mo Castillo, another one of our great editors, he actually ended up with Burrow and Lamar Jackson on the same roster. I don't think he wanted that.
Yeah.
And this is another thing. It's not on the script, but another thing is I like to bid. I try not to get into bidding because I'm screwing somebody else unless I have a really good tell on what somebody wants to do. I try to only bid if I would really be happy if the music stopped. If I could, not even happy, could I live with this player at this offer? If I could, you put out Gabe Davis, right, for a buck. And I'm sure in the back of your mind, you thought, well, yeah, of course I'd take Gabe Davis for a buck. And I would. I'm sorry I didn't go too. But he makes sense in any format, even though obviously he's in contrast and conflict with Diggs. But so what? You take him for a buck. And I try a lot of people. This format, it's so fun. It's addictive. If you could throw out a player and bid up a player and you know somebody wants that player, needs that player, and you get them to overpay, that's really, really fun.
Yeah.
But if
they
pull out the carpet from you, you end up with what Mo ended up with Burrow and Jackson on the same roster, which doesn't make sense. And this is only a 10-team league. And we know, I get this every year when people will have a couple of superstar quarterbacks, who do I draft? And I'll say, you know, you're really going to trade one at a loss, trade one to like the worst team in your league. They can't hurt you. And they'll always say the same thing. I've tried. Nobody thinks they need a quarterback. Even the guy who's playing Goff every week thinks he's fine. The guy who's playing Cousins every week thinks he's fine. So I can't trade one. So it's really hard in a non-superflex format to have two star quarterbacks because they don't make a lot of sense. So
I have $2 worth of Anthony Richardson and Brock Purdy on my team because I went high at wide receiver. But if Mo came knocking on my door, you know, for one of my receivers and tried to offer me Lamar, I mean, maybe I'd listen, but at the same time, be like, you know what? I'm going to see how this goes with Anthony Richardson.
You have the leverage. Like, you have the leverage. You don't have to make a trade. And also, there's going to be good quarterbacks in a 10-teamer. And again, you know, dear listener, you may be in 12 or 14-team leagues. You have to season to taste. The quarterback becomes more. Quarterback's such an easy fit in the smaller leagues because there's just too many good quarterbacks. That's why we're trying to say you should try Superflex. But I'm imploring people, really try not to bid unless you think that you'd be fine if everything stopped and you ended up with that player. And this is another reason why I try not to get, if I'm not going to be the policeman, if I'm not going to be the person who price enforces, I don't want to be in the late bidding on a player that I don't want because I tell the other room, I got this. I'm the bouncer here. I'm going to make sure Matt pays the right amount. I'm going to make sure Andy doesn't get a discount. Dalton doesn't steal something from us. You know, Titus doesn't make out on us. If I give that impression, if I'm, you know, I want to hear my voice. I want to punch that number. It's fun to do. I'm telling everybody else they can go walk the dog. They can go to the bathroom. They can do some research or check their email or whatever it is that they're doing on their own time. And now I'm left being the policeman. I don't want to be that policeman. I try to avoid that. That's actually, I think, a really important thing. Don't be the policeman unless you're actually interested in the player. Somebody else will do it. Yep. And you'll see sometimes if a player is thrown out at a ridiculous cost and the clock's ticking down, a lot of times you'll see three or four people bid at the same time. Like, oh, that's crazy. And the offers come flying in because nobody's going to. Now, it doesn't always happen. We screwed up with Kenneth Walker and he went for like $5 or $6. That doesn't make sense. But try not to be stuck taking out the trash. I want to mention one other thing really important. Okay. This is you talked about tiers. Sometimes the last player you want to. Get your players. You want to be purchasing your players, offering for your players when your opponents have alternatives, because if they have alternatives, they can let you win. He's like, okay, it's gotten a little pricey on this guy. I'll get that guy. If you wait until the last good player to tier is available, that's where the inflation kicks in. That's where players go for ridiculous numbers because there's nothing else to get. And everybody recognizes that. Usually, once the bidding has ping-ponged back and forth, like it seemed like it was stopping at 20. It's like 21, 22, 23, 34. Now we're at 29, 30. People are starting to chat in the chat about how much they're enjoying it. Or they're just laughing. You're laughing at you. That's horrible. You have to get your players when your opponents have alternatives. If you don't, that dreaded inflation is going to get you, or the last good time, the last good player you can get. And man, it gets ugly. Nothing's. And then it's one of those cases where the person who wins that player feels terrible. The person who doesn't win that player feels terrible because there's nothing left to get. You have to be more proactive and fill your roster earlier than that, or you'll be left in the most agonizing 3 minutes of your life.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought up the point about being the price enforcer too, because there is nothing worse than it's like, all right, I know, like, and people do this to me all the time because they know what receivers I like.
For
like,
sure.
But you have no idea because this stuff is so nebulous, right? The salary cap prices are so nebulous. You have no idea I love Brandon Ayuk, but do I love him at 24, but not 25? And you get me up one more dollar, and then I'm just like, actually, no, that's my line, right? You just have no idea where the line is. So you can really get stuck when the music stops. I do want to talk about stars and scrubs here, because Andy mentions this all the time, and the guy takes his own advice, right? Like he said on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, who knows, in salary cap drafts, he always tells people, build a team that you could not get in a snake draft. And I sort of did that with some of my receiver picks, but Andy went hard in the paint for it, man. He spent 44 on Travis Kelce, 46 on Nick Chubb, Tyreek Hill at 45, Saquon Barkley 37. Your league would have to be like drunk off their ass to make that happen in a snake draft. You know, something really went wrong, right? But then the rest of his players, $7 for Chris Godwin, $4 for Jordan Addison, $3 for Tua, two for Odell. Obviously, he gets Sam Laporta, of course, for $2. You know, he gets some decent values here and there. I don't mind the team that he ended up with, but because I know a lot of fantasy sharps and people generally recommend the Stars and Scrubs approach. And again, I sort of kind of tried to do it a little bit, not as drastic as Andy. And I think Andy's team looks better than mine. Mm-hmm. Talk to people how they kind of navigate that process and building that team.
Here's a rule of thumb. Shallower leagues, would I mean smaller in manager size or smaller in roster size, are about stars. Deeper leagues, more managers, more starting requirements, are generally about depth.
Yeah.
This was a 10-team league with only two starting receivers. There was a flex. This is, and I'm speaking as somebody who actually got a depth team. I probably have the best bench in the league. I think I only had one single dollar player. I like to have agency with my bench, but I think Andy probably did the right thing, which is that this is a quote unquote shallow league, only 10 teams, not the deepest starting requirements. Get the superstar starters, go Stars and Scrubs. And the advantage you get on the back end is that it won't be hard for him to cut his $1 players. He won't be emotionally tied to them. These were kind of what the room left for him. Now, he didn't get agency in the guys he got at the end, because the problem is there's something called the burden of the nomination. When you have no money left at the end, if you mention a good guy, he's usually trampled. You mention a bad player, you'll get stuck with him. It's really frustrating. You have to try to thread that needle. Who's good enough to want, but not good enough to be coveted by the room? So if you're going Stars and Scrubs, you have to live with, you might hate your bench, but that's okay. You're rolling out the best starting lineup in the league, which Andy almost unquestionably has right now. And that quote unquote ugly bench, that might just make it easy for him to cut guys and pick up. Mm-hmm. And we're not playing this league out, but easy for him. Again, in a shallow league, waiver wire, high replacement value, Stars and Scrubs makes a lot of sense, because you don't need... You don't want to be tied to your bench. Oh, my lovely bench. I don't want to touch it. I like all these guys. You know, my bench is, I have a really good bench. I have a team I think could compete in a deeper league off my bench alone. But if this league were played out, would I have the gumption to cut these guys for interesting players who appear in September? So I give you the user's guide again, the rule of thumb again. Shallow league, get stars. Deeper league, get depth. I think Andy knew what he was doing with the salary cap draft. And even though... I admit I have a problem with this. They have a thing called standings in the Yahoo software, and I always want to win the standings, right? That counts everybody on your roster. And it also means you get extra points if you take a second quarterback, because they score so many points and everything like that. But I did win the league on the quote unquote projected standings, but that counts your bench. That's like all your bench is going to play all season. I'm sure if you scored only the people starting, it would be the Barons team. So you get that shallow format, get your stars. You're in a deeper league. I want you to have like the best wide receiver three in the league. I want you to have the best three running backs in the league if you can. I want you to have two really good tight ends you feel about. Even a good backup quarterback might make sense in a deeper league, but those shallow leagues get those superstars.
Last thing here, just about the end of drafts. You wrote this in your piece, a salary cap league usually becomes a draft at the end. And I think it's important to know how to navigate the end of these drafts. You wrote that a whopping 29 of the final 33 players in our mock draft introduced went for the $1 minimum, which is fairly common in this format. There are two schools of thought. This is what you said when it comes to $1 players. So stay with me. Easy to cut players versus a powerful hand chosen bench. So I just kind of want to walk through this process, because I know I tried to be disciplined about this time around, because one, it's a mock, but sometimes when I'm really playing this league out, right, I'll throw the guy out for $1, but it's a guy that I really want. And if I've done the, you know, spent all my money earlier and I've only got like $3 per player, $4 per player left, I'll throw the $1 out and somebody bids me to two, they bid me to three, and I'm like, oh, I really want this guy. Then I go for four and then I'm screwed. Then it's only the $1 guys at the end, which isn't so bad in a 10 team format like this. But if it's 12, 14, I've been in some of those, then you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. Like, and by the way, I'm trying to get out of here, you know, so let me get the $1 guy that I'm just, you know, I'll throw out Nelson Aguilar, right? So how do we navigate the end of a salary cap draft?
Yeah, I love end games. I love chess end games. I was really good as an end game player in Scrabble, and I love salary cap end games. Say you have $8 left for three players. One thing I'll do is I'll say, okay, how do I want to structure that? Do I want a $6 player and two $1 guys? Do I want a $4 player, a $2 player, a $2 player? And sometimes you'll be pleasantly surprised. Somebody you thought was going to cost you $5 or $6 may go for less than you expected. Then you can upgrade what you expect from the other slots. But you keep in mind, when you get down near the end, and you're not stuck at $1 players. Again, that burden of the nomination can be really difficult. But if you're not stuck at $1 players, think about how much money do I have left? You can look in the Yahoo software and see what other people have, what their max bid is, what their salary structure is, and try to get an idea of how you might want to break that up. I also will a lot of times take a piece of scrap paper and write like the 7 or 8 guys I really like. You can also arrange your queue, of course, but you may want to also arrange your queue with nominations of guys you don't want. Because again, getting somebody to fill a roster spot has a lot of value, especially if you're somebody who can still overbid. When we get to the position where it's mostly $1 players, I'm usually going to have a slush fund where I can overbid. Some people, like Andy, may be stuck with $1 players because he went out and got the superstars. Totally viable strategy. If you have overbid power, be ready with the two. Okay? Somebody's going to come up who's good. And also, it's really interesting. Like, when somebody's stuck at $1 players, you know they're going to bring out somebody they probably want, but they think they can sneak through. Often it's the first person to say two gets that player because people don't have leverage anymore. So I'm ready. A lot of times I'll have that little field filled out with a two and I'm just ready to hit, boom, go. So the one comes up. Oh, I want that guy too. Oh, I don't want that guy. Hands away from the computer. So a lot of times it's the race to the two. Or no, if somebody has a max bid. Okay, Matt, you have a max bid of three. On a player, I'd be fine to go 3-4 anyway. I don't want you to say three because then I have to go 4. If I say 3, you can't go any higher. So sometimes I get to your number first. That can be a key thing. It's a lot of it is trial and error. It's nuance. You have to do some of these and maybe even make mistakes before you get the hang of it. Every room is different. All the biases are different. But my big strategies at the end. Have an idea of what the structure might be for your last few players. Get that scrap, whether it's your queue or your scrap paper, write the 7 or 8 guys, the 4 or 5 guys, whatever it is that you're really excited about. Do some queue maintenance because you don't want to. Also, in the Yahoo League, there's only a certain amount of time to make your nomination. It may be as many as 30 seconds. Now, for a lot of people, they know their way around. That's not hard. But other times, you may not be able to find the guy you want, which is why organizing your queue is really important. Also, if you have to leave early, you're going to want to organize your queue. Say you're stuck on single dollar players. You don't want to hang out for the end of it. Some people will do that sometimes. Get that queue organized so they're not picking, you know, Russell Gage, who's out for the season. You know, he doesn't pop up for you or something like that. Queue maintenance is always important in a Yahoo fantasy draft, I think, especially in the salary cap. So different schools of thought here. Nothing wrong. If you're fine with the singletons and you can wait, throw out a guy, your bid gets trampled. Okay. See it in 10 minutes. If you're fine with that, which it's not really my personality. Maybe I'm just more of a control freak. I want to have some agency with my bench. These are two strategies that can work, whether you go with the $1 players or you want to have some overbid power. Maybe I just like overbidding people. It's totally a false sense of security. Matt, you know, maybe it's just a personality flaw that I have, but a lot of different paths in the end game. And a lot of it is just going to be trial and error playing the format. You know, and getting a sense of what works for you and what doesn't, and what is your bidding style versus somebody else's bidding style.
Love it. All right. So that is how you go out and crush out your salary cap draft this year. That is going to be how you just go about this plan of attack, and you're going to dominate. You're going to dominate now after hearing Scott break all that down for you. So that's electric. Last thing here for us. It's fantasy draft season, and we all want to build that perfect team to dominate our friends, family, and coworkers. So for this week's Build Your Team, courtesy of Toyota Racing, we're tackling this major draft debate. And Scott, it's about ecosystems, baby. I want to know, Scott, what should we prioritize more in drafts? Is it decent players in great ecosystems, or is it stars, proven players, but they're maybe in bad ecosystems, right? I mean, listen, if you went the ladder there with like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf last year, you made a big profit. So I know maybe the answer is it depends, but I want to hear your strategy about this specific debate in fantasy.
Yeah, it depends is never a bad answer. But here's the thing. And a lot of times these questions will come up with receivers, right? I have to feel good about the quarterback. If I don't think the quarterback can elevate the play of the receiver, then that just puts a cap on the receiver's ceiling. It often comes up with running backs. With running backs, we're always trying to anticipate game script. Think of Damian Pierce, good player. Is Houston going to win 4 or 5 games? Is Damian Pierce going to be in hurry-up packages? What if they fall way behind? Is he going to have weeks where he has 9 or 10 touches? That's a major ding to him. So I think I need to feel – I want to have a team. My default is I want to draft – look at my top, especially the top half of my draft. But by the time of the second party draft comes up, you're accepting flaws and fleas and flags about all your players. You have to live with that. I ideally want the top half of my roster to be on offenses I feel really good about.
I think that makes a ton of sense. Like the it depends part for me is definitely at running backs. I really like to chase good situations. And that sometimes can bang you if it's a back who's not going to earn those touches, right? If he's going to, you know, be usurped by somebody else. Like I know this is the big debate with Alexander Mattison this year where how talented is he? It's a great, theoretically, it's a great situation because sure. He looks like he's just moonwalking into the bell cow role there. But if he falters, do they give Ty Chandler a look or something like that? Right. So it doesn't always work out perfectly, but I do try to prioritize situation at running back and even tight end a little bit, like a great offensive ecosystem. If this guy's going to go out there and be a touchdown threat, it way down like the rankings at tight end. Jake Ferguson, right? He's in a great, we talked about him. He's in a great situation. I think that's why he's an interesting bet there. But at receiver, and maybe this is just not surprising to you based on the work that I do, I am definitely prioritizing talent, even if it is in a bad situation. And look, that's got me stuck with Terry McLaurin, you know, having decent but not great seasons for many years. So you could say the same with Allen Robinson before it fell apart. Obviously, DJ Moore's in that bucket too. But the reason I go that way, Scott, is because I think that sometimes we're just really straight up bad at reading situations, right? The Seahawks example is a great one from last year where everybody's like, wow, this is the worst quarterback situation in the league. I said it was an unserious quarterback situation at times. That was mostly Drew Lock, not Geno Smith related, but we'll leave that revisionist history elsewhere. And like, if we get those situations wrong, we know the guys are going to produce, right? So same thing with guys like a Michael Pittman this year. Everybody assumes based on his ADP, it's a run heavy offense. It's a quarterback that's going to run a lot. And it's a quarterback that's probably not ready to play at least or be a high level starter. I think some of that is true. But what if we're wrong about that last part? And what if Anthony Richardson's really good? And in my opinion, Michael Pittman is a really good player that's going to dominate the targets there. So I like to bake in some of that uncertainty, specifically at the receiver position. But for sure, I'm with you that early on, the first three rounds especially, I'm really not trying to take my chance on players on bad teams.
What if we're wrong is a really key part of this. I mean, how do we feel about Daniel Jones today versus a year or two ago? How do we feel about Jared Goff today versus a year or two ago? And that's why we love fantasy, because it's so fluid. And opinions change and situations change and coaching changes and personnel changes and our opinions ultimately have to change. And so glad that the Toyota's on board, by the way. My first car was a Toyota Camry. Much great memories about that. And you mentioned moonwalking about three times on this episode. I think I moonwalked into that Camry. So shout out to the Toyota guys putting out great cars for us.
Hey, my current truck is a Toyota Tundra. So we're good on the same page. There's big Toyota guys here. Yeah. All right. Well, so there you have it. Whether you're on the field or the track, or building your fantasy roster, you've got to have a great team around you. That was Build Your Team, thanks to our friends at Toyota Racing. And Scott, that's going to do it for us today. Jam-packed episode, a ton of, you know, murky, mercurial receivers to talk about in the news. We had salary cap talk. We had ecosystem talk. The hell of a Harmon Scott podcast, man. So I appreciate you doing this one.
My pleasure. It's fun.
All right, so that concludes Strategy Week here on the podcast. Be sure to go back and listen to any pods you may have missed before you head into your drafts. We talked it all. We also had some, as Scott would say, outright silliness from the Fantasy Football Expo. We also had Austin Eckler for the return of Eckler's Edge. Definitely make sure you do not listen to that. Austin gave some great insight to how to decipher some of these committee backfields. In the meantime, if it's a social media app, Yahoo Fantasy is there. It's at Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Matt Harmon _BYB. That is at Scott _Pianowski. If there was any salary cap question you did not get from this episode, you can read Scott's article, yahoosports.com/fantasy. You can tweet at Scott. He will certainly give you everything you need to know. You can also watch this show on YouTube at Yahoo Sports. Next week, next week, it is Convictions Week on the pod, where we provide our strongest stances on the busts, breakouts, and best bets. The betting boys, the betting bros will be back for the first time heading into the 2023 fantasy season on Monday. Scott is back to help us identify the biggest sleepers this year and maybe give us a little insight into his all-boring team. Until then, we're out.